Welcome, everybody, to Wise Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today, we're excited to have Tim Spiker. He's the founder of Aperio and the Who's Not What Principle, a profound research-based truth that has powered 15 years of leadership success. Tim's book, The Only Leaders Worth Following, Why Some Leaders Succeed, Others Fail, and How the Quality of Our Lives Hangs in the Balance, explores who, not what, in depth. And it's inviting readers into a journey that can only change the way they lead from the inside out. Tim and his organization help people become, be, and stay leaders who are actually worth following. His work includes delivering keynote talks, creating unique and customized learning experiences, and guiding long-term developmental journeys. He has worked with leadership teams in North America, Australia, and Asia. Tim holds a bachelor's degree in electrical engineering and a master's in marketing organizational development from Washington University in St. Louis. He currently lives in Atlanta and with his wife and four children. Want to give you a little bit more heads up on Tim's website. It's at theaperio.com. That's the A-P-E-R-I-O.com. His Twitter is at Tim Spiker, which is how we found him. And then you can find him on LinkedIn, of course, as well. So let me just welcome you officially first. Thanks for being here. And The first question I always ask is, you know, kind of what I've read your bio, which is very nice, but I want you to come from your perspective in terms of your experience, in terms of what's your journey in terms of writing this book, in terms of your work. Like, tell us a little bit of that we wouldn't necessarily read in a bio.
Well, I have a funny story. I think many of us look to the point where we landed in a career, and at some point in that story, there was something completely unexpected that you had nothing to do with that somehow plays a pivotal role. It's kind of, you know, reminiscent of Tess of the D'Urbervilles. There's this thing that happened and it changed the course of everything. And that's my story. I was waiting tables before I went to grad school. And I had a fellow server who invited me to an open house for a marketing company. And Sue, if anybody ever invites you to an open house for a marketing company, I'm going to encourage you to ask more questions than I did.
Sounds like a timeshare.
Well, you're sniffing in the right direction. I was interested in marketing, and I figured I was at a time in life when, you know, a free meal was very appealing. I was pretty sure there was going to be a free meal there. Yeah. So I said yes. And when I got there, I took a seat in the middle of the room. So being invited to this thing was kind of unexpected, and I couldn't have arranged. Sitting in the middle of the room turned out to be a very pivotal moment. Because about 3 minutes in, I realized what an open house for a marketing company is. It is a recruiting meeting for a multi-level marketing company.
Right.
And I don't have anything against MLMs personally. I know a lot of people have been involved in them, but I did know that I did not want to sell water purifiers to my family and friends. So I was in the middle of the room and I had a choice. Am I going to make a scene and get out of here? Or do I wait for the break, grab my sandwich and sneak out the back? And
I got to get the sandwich.
Well, I mean, priorities, right? Priorities. So that choice of that seat in the middle of the room kept me there. And then I heard the thing that has absolutely changed the course of my life. They started talking about what does it mean to be an employee? They started talking about what does it mean to be led? And I just checked out. The presenter started to sound like Charlie Brown's teacher to me. And I just sat in that chair, trapped in the center of that room, and thought, why does that have to be a horrible answer? How come somebody doesn't say, hey, Tim, what is it like to work for Sue? And I don't say, I can't believe how I'm growing. I can't believe what we're accomplishing. I can't believe how it's impacting not only me or my family as well. Why can't that be the answer? And I sat there and was kind of unwilling to accept the doom and gloom that I heard in the room as the final answer. And so I did get my sandwich and leave at the break. But from that night on, I started.
You had your mantra.
Well, yeah. So I started interviewing every single leader that I had access to. I probably knew how to spell the word leadership at that point, but not much more. Mm-hmm. And that just snowballed. And I would ask every person that I met with, who else should I talk to? And they'd give me three names and call up Jerome. And I'd say, Jerome, you don't know me, but Sue said I should talk to you. Oh yeah, Sue. And people were so gracious.
Right.
And over time, that led to a consulting position in leadership development. And that led to the research that this book is all about. So it started off with being kind of duped into going to an MLM recruiting meeting. And I tell people that is best lie I've ever been told in my life. So
that's great. That's a good story, Tim. So let's move into the book. So tell us a little bit about this research. So there's 15 years of research and everyone wants to know about research and data, you know, data. So tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So I was working with a boutique consulting firm and we were bringing our clients up to the west side of Pikes Peak in Colorado here in the
Central. I know it. I used to live there. I know it very well. Right.
So you know the beauty of that place.
Yes.
What an incredible place it is. And we would put them through a series of developmental experiences, but we also put them through a series of assessments. So we had a personality assessment, a natural ability assessment, and a leadership 360. And our clients would ask us, what's the magic mix? What's the connection between personality, natural ability, and leadership performance? And we had enough data to run the numbers. So my colleague, Vanessa Kiley, she was our resident number cruncher. She put the SPSS software through its paces. And she came back to us and she said, here's the answer. Nothing. There was no correlation between any aspect of personality, any aspect of natural ability with any part of leadership. And so I turned to go out of her office that night and I said, all right, well, at least we have an answer when they ask.
Right. Interesting.
But software will look where we weren't looking. And I kind of love that part of the story. Not that there's any problem with having a hypothesis and finding, you know, proving it out. Mm-hmm. We weren't looking just at our leadership 360, but the SPSS software did. And what it found is that we had 8 aspects of leadership that we were measuring, but just 2 of them were accounting for just under 70% of the variability on the whole thing.
Oh, wow.
And so, you know, if you've got a pizza and you've got 8 slices, any 2 should only be worth 25%. She reran the data years later with 10 times the data point, and that went up to 77%. And so fast forwarding many years, because sometimes, you know, when you're so close to something, you can't quite see what it is. Actually left the firm, was working in another company, sitting in my office one day, looking at that leadership model, knowing that those 2 are 77% of the variability. And then it just landed on me like a ton of bricks. Those 2 are about who you are as a person. The other 6 are about what you do
as a person. Leader.
And so then you got to that 3/4 of leadership is about who you are, not what you do.
Sure. So what were the 2 pieces of the pizza there?
Yeah, that's the big question, right? Inwardly sound and others focused.
Oh, so those are the 2. Okay. I thought so, but I wasn't sure. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. No, you've got it. Inwardly sound and others focused.
So let's say that again. Inwardly sound.
Yes.
And others focused.
Yeah. So
because we're going to talk about that a lot today. So I want everyone to inward. It's hard to say inwardly sound and others. It's easier to read and others focused. Okay.
Yes. Yes.
Right.
So where do you want to dive in on those 2?
Well, I want to talk. The second question is about, you know, this idea of who, not what. And so you talked a little about that, how it was discovered. So you talked about the research and you're suggesting that those two aspects of the 8 are more who, not what. So, and you came up with this principle, who, not what principle. So do you want to say anything more about the genesis of that idea?
I think that the one idea that we work with people on to help them understand, we're not saying that the what of leadership, and this would be the typical things that we would talk about around strategy, execution, motivation, development of talent, development of culture, communication, all of these kind of typical leadership books that we might see as we're passing through the airport, you know, back when we used to fly.
Right. I had one of those once. Yeah.
Yes. Yeah. That stuff is important and good.
Yeah.
But when we say not what principle, we're talking about the foundation. And ultimately, so these things are connected. Our analogy is that of a big, strong tree. When you drive down the road, you see that big tree. You don't usually look at it and say, wow, I bet the roots are awesome. But they are. And so who is fueling the what of leadership? We can get into the details of that later on, but ultimately those roots are what are helping to make that tree big and strong. Who makes the what of leadership matter? So that's the relationship between the 2.
So what I do want to do today is talk about these 2 aspects and talk about examples that you have in your work and such. And I also want to relate it to organizational culture and company cultures, because it just so happens, one, that our theme, our Wise Talk theme for the year is on organization culture.
Great.
And particularly how we are dealing with Zoom culture and how we can create the water cooler, so to speak, on Zoom.
Yeah.
Or not. And so I do want us to get back to that at some point, and we will. So let's start with how you look at inwardly sound, because I mean it's a lot. Yeah. I love the way that sounds actually, but I want you to tell me more about it.
Well, tell us more about it. I could read off a laundry list of characteristics, and I will, but I think the broader story is probably a little bit of a better place to start with. So think of the word sound. I want you to think about a ship that's going to go out to sea. What does it mean for it to be a sound vessel? That means that the hull of it has integrity and the connection points are firm and strong. And as the winds and waves come in with weather, it's able to batter the hull of that ship without it causing it to sink. Just take that exact same idea and apply it to a person. You know, is there integrity?
Don't want to sink.
Is that strength? What's that?
Don't want to sink.
Yeah, no, you don't want to sink. But right. you have an internal development and fortitude, a clarity in who you are that carries with it a confidence and an understanding that even as challenges may come, that those can be withstood. Kind of we'll stick with the water analogy, you know, a port in a storm, not just because we're friends, but because that's the inner makeup of who I am. And I've done the hard work to become that really strong, inwardly sound person. So that's the general idea. Again,
right. I like the analogy. Yeah, I like it. I think it's easy to remember. Yeah. So Tim, I want to talk about when you wrote this book and last year, and it was published in June. So it was probably already written way before COVID.
Yes.
So I want you to talk about what's in the book around this concept. So give us some examples, but then I also want you to then apply it to, I'm going to make an assumption here that those who are inwardly sound probably are withstanding COVID weirdness more than anyone, you know, better than people that aren't so inwardly sound.
Yeah.
But I want to start with what's in the book and how you see inwardly sound, some of the characteristics, some of the practices, some of the examples.
Sure. So I'll reel off the list of them here and
sure.
Talk about some of the examples. So first, let's start with the idea of being secure and settled. If you want to know secure what that means, the opposite of being insecure.
Yes.
If anybody's ever followed an insecure leader, you know that this is not a good idea. If we can avoid following insecure leaders, because the focus is all messed up. It's not on what we're doing. It's not on where the organization's heading. It's justifying my existence here. And I want to say that with a measure of grace and concern, because I've talked with, I'm thinking of one particular senior leader who confided in me that basically said, I don't know that I belong in this position. I don't know. And we're talking about a sizable organization. And we get really frustrated. I get really frustrated with leaders who are insecure because their shrapnel goes over everybody. And it's really bad. But I promise you that leader didn't want to get up in the morning, go into work and feel insecure every day. That wasn't the point. Mm-hmm. That's a terrible place to be. It has repercussions for others, but it's also not good for that person. So secure and settled, we start there. That's probably the most foundational one. Then self-aware, principled, holistically healthy, purposeful, and emotionally mature. That's a lot, Tim. Oh, it is. It is. It is. And you'll find as we talk about others focus, there's going to be a lot of things there too. But ultimately, if the weeds help us tackle it, you know, if it stays too broad, what do we do? But we can always step back up and just go step back from it and say that boat analogy, what is it I'm trying to do? I'm trying to become a person who is stable, even when the world outside of me is not. That's what we're working on to be inwardly sound.
So I like the sound or you mentioned secure and settled. So say more about the settled part.
Well, so I have a colleague, his name is John Ott. He has a way with words. And he would say that secure and settled, the leader who's secure and settled says, I'm okay. And come what may, I'm okay. And so secure is a little bit more leaning towards how do I see myself in relationship to the world, flaws and all. Settled is about, hey, everything's swirling around. Everything is challenging. Certainly COVID has brought this in waves and waves and waves. Even as that is going on out there, that's the come what may, I'm okay. And so we combine these two things together to create a person that can really be counted on.
So I'm going to throw out some things I'm noticing with clients and with myself and with my own team. And I want to see if that's resonating with you and what you're noticing. And then let's see if we can talk about it. So I've spent, I wouldn't say an inordinate amount of time, but it's a sufficient amount of time telling myself and my team and many of our clients that you're okay. Like, it's normal to feel unsettled, insecure, because we're all going through something that none of us have ever been through and hope that we don't have to go through again, at least in this way we're having to do it. And so, because there's a lot of people that are feeling, that I'm seeing, that are just feeling, I wouldn't say that they're clinically depressed, but they're definitely struggling, lower than they were usually.
Yeah.
What are you seeing in this?
Well,
are you seeing that?
I haven't seen, personally, I've not seen a ton of that, but I've also have a chance to be in, you know, I haven't been recently doing a lot of work in the space such as food service, which is just being decimated and things like, so it really depends on, I've been working a lot recently with manufacturing clients who have been deemed essential and therefore they're having to figure out a way to navigate, but they're still working. And I think that that makes a huge difference. So everything that I'm reading suggests exactly what you're saying. My world within our particular clients has, you know, has its limitations because we're not working with 1,000 people at the same time. So I think the issue you're bringing up is absolutely critical and no question a major, major concern. And it multiplies when it's the leader. It multiplies because leaders have that shadow and that influence that they cast. And so when the leader is feeling unsettled, it's very difficult for her or him to bring settledness to others, which is why that role is so important. Especially
and what are, and so what are some of the ways, there's a things you rattled off, including emotional maturity, which obviously, you know, self-awareness, which obviously are related to being settled. So how are you suggesting to people that they feel more settled so that that rubs off on other people in a way that, that especially given what we're in, the uncertainty we're in, is there some specific things you can, you're pointing to help people with that?
Yeah, well, a lot of this can get back to very kind of inner work around worldview and how do you see yourself and how do you see the world? One of the challenges with security and settledness is if 100% of our ability to be secure and settled is based on external forces. And so if we haven't done some of the work to have some of that security and settledness come internally, in other words, it doesn't matter if there's COVID, I have some clarity about who I am. It doesn't matter if there's racial unrest. I have, by the way, I don't mean it doesn't matter. I mean, within myself, I have a sense of purpose and I've been doing that sort of work to look about who's the, what type of person do I want to be? I know I can count on that direction regardless of external. Mm-hmm. So we're all we're all influenced by external. So there's no question about that. And some of our self-worth can come from those external feedbacks, especially when they're really positive. But if 100% of our clarity about how secure and settled we are comes from the external, then we're setting ourselves up because we can't control all that stuff.
Right.
We can't control that. And so it's important to tap into sources that are not purely external.
So one of those, some of those sources, I mean, are you suggesting in the book and your research to for people to meditate, for people to and understand how they're triggered, what triggers them? Tell me, I don't want to put words in your mouth. Tell me what
No. I mean, it's yes and yes and yes and yes. Yes, these are all helpful things. So obviously mindfulness has some great practices here, which really kind of attack even just the physiology of being unsettled. So it's one thing about worldview and that, but it's also another thing for me to just calm myself physically. And there are, you know, Shahrzad Shamin does some great work around this regarding positive intelligence and just kind of even creating 10-second increments of There's the big meditation, mindfulness stuff, but it's also possible to capture that in bite-sized chunks. So that's one place where you even just, you leverage the physiology of your body to help settle your mind and your spirit, kind of working in some ways the opposite direction that we sometimes think to work, to kind of manage the physical self in order to create more settledness in who we are. Another one is, for some people, ultimately, it becomes a journey of faith. Ultimately, what do I believe? And some people are kind of getting back to that. And there's not going to prescribe a particular faith that is the way to go. But for some people, they feel in this time that it's created some disconnection from some things that previously, you know, whatever happened in life caused me to get away from that. Well, one of the things about faith is it's one of those things that's outside of us. And by that, I shouldn't say that. It's outside of those external forces. So it comes to be something that we can hold even when things are attacking us from the outside. So I know it's like, you know, we joke a little bit in the work, like, oh, we can't talk about faith in the workplace. But we also have to talk about, over millennium, faith has played an important role for settling people in terms of who they are. And so we put on the table 7 or 8 different ideas of practices and things to pursue in order to help settle oneself. And that's one of them.
Some of the other things you had said in the seventh, I think you said 7 different, self-awareness, yeah, emotional maturity. Give me another couple. I didn't write them down.
Self-aware, principled, holistically healthy, purposeful, and emotionally mature.
Okay, holistically healthy. Let's talk about that one. What does that mean to you?
Well, the idea is that we want to operate with some type of margin. And you can go through all of the areas of life, physical, financial, intellectual, emotional, vocational, relational, spiritual, and say, if I don't have margin in these areas, then there's 2 things I'm going to be lacking as a leader. I'm going to be lacking the ability to take advantage of an unexpected opportunity that comes along. So that's about capacity. But I'm also going to be compromised if I can't take a punch. And so I'll use it, even though it's maybe not the normal one when people think about holistic health, I want to use finances because it's a really clear example. Let's say that I am somebody who lives within my means. You're like, well, what impact does this have on leadership? Well, here's the impact. The transmission drops out of my car. Every month I put money away into a rainy day fund. I've got to spend $3,000 to repair that. I've been planning for that. I took that margin. I set it aside. I can take a punch and it's not a big deal. Think back to the time when we didn't have those funds available and the transmission drops out. It is a much bigger deal.
Very stressful.
Yeah. And so think about that same concept. Now, it could be also I'm setting money aside and a big investment opportunity comes along. And so this idea of resilience and capacity. Resilience and capacity are what we need as leaders to be able to bring people along. And when we invest in creating margin through holistically healthy practices in all of those areas, I just use finance as an example, then we're creating margin that creates health. Health creates resilience and capacity. And that's something that our teams really need from us.
Do you talk about health literally? Like, I mean, I've been, you know, suggesting to people that they get outside at least twice a day, that they do some walking, that they take calls, not on Zoom as much, you know, not spend more than 4 hours on Zoom. And I know that seems very illogical that people can actually do that, but
100%.
But I mean, take some calls on the phone, walking, especially with your team, you know, that kind of thing. What are you suggesting in terms of people's health?
Well, I mean, self-management, you know, all of these areas need attention. And fortunately for many of us, well, for all of us, really, there's connections. And so when I go move myself physically and don't just Zoom myself into a trance every day, it's not just a physical benefit. There's also a mental benefit that goes along with that. And so certainly we've got to take breaks. I talked to somebody and I said, like, how long before you feel like you're not doing well? And I think her response was like 5 hours. I'm like, we need to take breaks. Because you need to be on your game, and there are certain, we have different capacities. So I will say it's not the same for every person, but certainly there's so many benefits to physically moving yourself on a regular basis. It's keystone in that regard. So you take care of one, it's going to have an impact on others, and that's certainly one of them.
Well, yeah, I mean, we're not even, you know, walking from meeting to meeting. Like, we used to at least do that.
Right. That's right.
Some of the campuses are pretty big, so it would take a while to get there. All right, so let's stop for a second. So we've talked about 2 of the who's, who, not what principle. That would be in, we've been talking about inwardly sound, which I really like. And then we're going to also talk about others focus in a minute here. But when I open it up, if you have a question, just anybody want to jump in here?
Hi, Tim. First of all, thanks for the time this afternoon. Enjoyable discussion so far. I'd like to ask a question about resilience. Is resilience something that has a cap for everybody, or is that something that can be built through behaviors and intentional change? Can we increase our capacity? Can we increase our resilience over time? Thanks. Yep.
Thanks, Josh. I believe that we have, no matter where we are, I think we have the ability to improve. I think it would be foolish to say that everybody has the exact same capacity. I mean, just think about some of the people you know who can, when necessary, go on about 4 hours sleep. Not all the time, none of us can do that, but we know that people have different tolerances around that. So I think we have different starting spaces, but regardless of where we start, I think that we can improve. I think that we can create greater resilience. And again, take those areas I was just reeling off earlier. Physical, can we improve our physical stamina, our physical ability physically, financially? If we have healthy, and I know it's, again, I'm coming back to this example, but healthy personal financial practices actually have an impact on how healthy we are overall. And it's never about the number of zeros, by the way. It's about, are we able to have disciplines where we simply, you know, save for a rainy day and live off less than we make. I mean, it's not super complicated, but it does require discipline. So physical, financial, intellectual. Am I exercising my brain in a way that is challenging and keeping it sharp? Emotional and emotional relational, I'm going to kind of put those together. Am I doing something called keeping short accounts, which is to say, I don't let small fissures in relationships simmer or fester. I address them in a mature way before things start to bubble up too much. And again, spiritually, there's an opportunity to say, how do I connect in with spiritual practices? All of these things, I think we could look at our lives and say, okay, over the last 20 years, gosh, 10 years ago, I was really making wise financial choices. You know, but in the last year with COVID, I've been doing a little retail therapy, and I may have taken it a bit too far. The point is that we have an opportunity with all of those areas to build on where we are. So I do think, Josh, back to your question, that there probably is a capacity limit for all of us, but it's probably different for every one of us in different ways. And, you know, let's figure out a way to bump up against that. Let's continue to, you know, pursue that health. So I think there's no doubt that we can improve. At times you might find some limitations, but most of us don't run into those as often as maybe I wish that we could. So I think they can be improved for sure.
Thanks, Josh, for your question. Appreciate it. All right, great. So we're going to move on to others focus. I want to hear more about what that means to you. And then we're also going to tie that back to some organizational culture stuff. So tell us about others focused.
So I'll reel off the list here. And one of the things you've heard already, you're going to hear again. So when we talk about being an others focused leader, we talk about being attentive, curious, empathic, humble. A Greek word called agapone, which is technically translated as love. I realize people freak out in the business space, but when we talk about, we're not talking about a feeling, we're talking about a commitment to serve. The idea that the followers are not here to just, you know, feed me grapes and fan me, but I'm actually here to help enable them. And so that's what agapone is all about. And then finally, the one you're hearing again is emotionally mature. It shows up twice, because it really has a foot in both worlds of inwardly sound and others focused. Mm-hmm. So those are the things that we talk about.
Can you go through those again, Tim? Do them one more time. Sure.
Attentive, curious, empathic, humble, agapone, and emotionally mature.
Great. Where do you want to start?
Curious is one that people have a lot of easy affinity to. I don't know that I've ever run into a leader at any level. Top leaders of many billion-dollar multinationals say, yeah, I could probably be a little more curious. The key here, though, is that there's plenty of articles that are written about intellectual curiosity, and that is important. But think about the umbrella that we're under here, which is others-focused. We're not really fully being curious if we're not really curious about the people that we're leading, curious about their ideas and their perspectives, curious what they have to bring to the table. And we could also be curious about them personally. Like, who are they? What are the type of person?
Right.
You don't mean that in an invasive way, but just look, hey, it's another human being. And so there, we need to expand curiosity to not just be intellectual curiosity, because that's not enough to cause somebody. Intellectual curiosity doesn't make somebody want to run through a wall for you. The fact that you're really interested in them does. And so curiosity needs to be a bigger part of our equation as leaders if we're going to be others focused.
Well, I think that there's no question in Silicon Valley that intellectual curiosity is alive and well. I mean, right. It's definitely alive. I'm not sure. I think that we probably argue too much, but we really are a Bay Area of ideas. Like, that is what we're known for, okay. Right?
Yeah.
And there's a lot of good ideas that don't see the light of day, actually, which is amazing, because, you know, there's just so many good ideas here. And I'm not saying that we have, you know, the cornerstone of all good ideas, but I'm just saying there's just a lot of intellectual curiosity. And I'm working with some engineers right now and data scientists, and they're debating, you know, the content and I'm the same way. I mean, I love debating, you know, making a force of better argument. There's so many great ideas out there. So how do we get people that are intellectually curious, and then have them actually use that to transfer to being curious about the people that work for them? Is there a way to you help people do that?
Well, it's challenging. I mean, the most important thing to start with is to help that group understand that the intellectual curiosity is not enough if you want somebody to bring their discretionary effort. I know, you know, like, well, it should be. Maybe it should be, but it isn't. And that's where, you know, I'm an engineer by training, and there are times when I've got to set that aside. Like, you know, Tim, stop being an engineer and start being a human. And I don't mean that in offense to any engineers. I think I can say that because I am one.
Yes.
I've got to set aside, you know, what is it that puts fuel in the tank for people? Are they inspired by great ideas? Yes. But you know what's really underneath the surface of that many times is I'm inspired by somebody who really gives a rip about me. I mean, I know that maybe feels a little too touchy-feely, but it's a reality. Is that I'm much more trusting to run through that wall, as I talked about earlier, when I believe that somebody's inviting me to do that, not just for their own interest, but for mine.
Mm-hmm.
That makes a world of difference. And what we need everywhere, if we're gonna maximize leadership, is that discretionary effort. Everybody's got, there's what I have to and what I can bring, and there's a delta between those two.
So, one of the things that I love about what you're saying is that you mentioned this idea of how do we get people to go beyond their own self-interest. You didn't say it exactly this, like this, beyond their own self-interest and understanding, you know, being curious about other people. And all we have to do is look to see what has happened in the last 10 months to know that people are very self-interested right now. As a culture. I mean, we are, unfortunately, blowing it in the world because we are so self-interested that we want to do what we want to do. And I mean, obviously I'm referring to mask wearing and things like that. And people just sort of like, it's okay because I can do what I want to do. So there's this individualistic, the rugged individual that the Americans are known for. And I mean, I'm all for that. I mean, that's what entrepreneurship is based on, basically. But how do we balance that? And how do we people are ambitious and they're self-interested and they're, you know, I had this conversation about this very thing with somebody at a big company just previous to you. You know, she's just like, she feels she's interested in her team, but she doesn't think that her boss and her boss's boss and boss's boss's boss are, and that they're just more interested in the money. Yeah. And I'm like, wow, okay, that's pretty bad. But so what is it? What is it that, how do we help leaders do that? How do we help leaders balance that to be self-interested, but also be interested in the other?
Well, I think that there's a couple of authors that have gone well before me that have brought this issue up, and Jim Collins is one of them.
Sure.
And when he talks about humility and pressure and professional will, that professional will part says, that's ambition, but it's not ambition for self. It's ambition for the enterprise or for the cause mm-hmm. that we're fighting for. And so you mm-hmm. see that. And then Patrick Lencioni just recently wrote The Motive. And he's saying, why are you leading? If you're leading because of what you can get, there is going to be a limit on the impact of your leadership.
I love that. That's great.
If you're leading because of what you can give, there's no limit. And so in that regard, I don't even know that we want to balance it. I think we want ambition that is shifted, not just to the person in the mirror. And this is why this work is so hard. And it's not like, well, dang, like you're digging in deep stuff, Tim. Well, that's what causes people to love following people when it's not all about them. And so I think there's a possibility to tap into that, what we might have called, you know, traditional American ambition. What if that ambition was twisted just a little bit? And it's not about self, it's about the enterprise, it's about the cause, it's about the leading.
Sure. I mean, I like what he said about, you know, lead for what you're going to give instead of what you're going to get. I mean, I think that says it much more succinctly than I just did. So I think that there is sometimes people have, you know, moments, they get this in different ways. Some people, they go into leadership because they already get it. But for people that are like, they are ambitious and they are not maybe not as humble and maybe not as generous because they're interested. And maybe it's because they're working hard for their family. I mean, it could not be necessarily something for them personally.
Right.
How do we help them see the importance of being curious about other people's well-being? Because I think that's where the shift we're going to make until COVID, because I think that's, if there's anything that's required us to really look at other people's well-being, this is probably it, so.
Yeah. You know, I think that what follows that up is just a hard question. And that is kind of what's your purpose in doing this? I mean, certainly taking care of your family is not that there's nothing ignoble about that. At the same time, though, one of the questions that we ask people on a regular basis is, who's the best leader that you've ever personally followed? And just listen to what people say after that. They don't talk about technical skills at that point. They usually don't even talk about intellect or profit. They talk about people who invested themselves generously mm-hmm. in others. They talk about people who care. In fact, I'll say this. I've never in my entire career, and I've asked that question more times than I can even remember, there's never been a single person who came back with an example to answer that question and said it was somebody that didn't care about it. Never. Not a single time.
Yeah.
And so the question is, and I don't mean this in a harsh way, what do you want to do? If your goal is to look, if I'm really going to be honest with myself, I just want to make money. Okay. Like, I'm not going to argue with you about that because there's a lot of ways to do that. We're talking about how to be a great leader. And most of the times that upward mobility, great leadership and finances, lots of times that goes together. On occasion, it doesn't. And you have to decide what's your bigger goal here. What's your bigger motive? What are you really after? And that's a question that each one of us has to look in the mirror and think about and answer. And I just invite people to do that because I think it's important to figure out, am I trying to be the very best leader I can possibly be? Or are there times when I'd say, you know what, I'll take the money. And if that's the case, let's just be honest with ourselves about that.
Yeah, I think in many cases, it's like a value, they can do both. So let's talk about the curiosity and how that applies to org culture and then applies now with trying to have org culture on this, on video.
Yeah.
We've been really trying to tackle this and I don't know what the word is look at it. The anthropological aspects of it, the sociological aspects of it, and trying to help people help be curious about others and to tap into their well-being, even though we're not in the same room. So what do you have to say about that in terms of how we can create culture or sustain the culture that a company has with what we're dealt with right now, which is basically video. Now, I know in the where you're in your situation, you've been dealing with some people in manufacturing, so that's a little bit different. And things have changed for them, but those changes are different. So I wanted to focus more on people that are working at home,
sure,
because that's the vast majority of people listening in today, and that's who we work with. Typically, people coming to our talks.
Yeah.
So what are some ideas you have around that?
Well, even in those manufacturing environments, there are people that used to go in the office that don't anymore. And many of them senior leadership positions. Sure. So I think we all understand that we continue to be in an unprecedented time. And I think we just want to hold on to that word a little bit, because if we are in an unprecedented circumstance, we're going to have to do some unprecedented things in order to manage it. Mm-hmm. And so I've got some folks that I work with. It's a very, very simple idea, because everybody recognizes that the water cooler kind of doesn't exist anymore because this is our interaction. And so certainly management by walking around is not possible. And so all of that normal human interaction connection is not available to us without intention. And so what do we do? And I love the response by one of our clients who just said, I just schedule a meeting and there's no business. I'm checking in on you. Mm-hmm. And like, well, I would never be that blunt or that straightforward. Okay, this is an unprecedented time. You know, the water cooler is not going to offer it to you. And I totally get that the first time or the first three times, or maybe always, it's a little awkward. I get that. But we've got to be willing to be in a little awkward situation, because this is the only way we can express care. This is the only way we can, mm-hmm. I mean, yeah, we might be able to meet a need. We might find out about something we can help out with through those conversations. Mm-hmm. And so it might seem a little odd, but the times are odd. The situation is odd. The context is odd. And so that's going to call us to do things like, hey, I want to get 15 minutes with you next Thursday. What's the agenda? No agenda. I'm just going to check in and see how you are. And I see leaders doing that. And I love their willingness to be in a little bit of an awkward space, because they're trying to communicate care.
What's awkward about it in your mind?
Well, I just think that some people have in the business place, for some people, it's never been just that blatant, nothing else on the table. I'm checking in mm-hmm. on your well-being. Mm-hmm. I think, mm-hmm. you know, spaces where you operate, Sue, it's probably more normal, because, you know, folks like you and I are trying to ask questions like that all the time.
Yeah.
But imagine folks that maybe aren't used to it, because what it was before is we both showed up at the meeting 3 minutes early and there's a little chit chat that at least gives you a hint of how are things going. And, you know,
right. Check in on travel, check in on family.
Just a little bit. We don't have that. And so because we don't have that naturally, we've got to do it intentionally. And I think,
yeah, I'm with you. I mean, I'm calling that lingering. I mean, there's a lingering beforehand, and of course there's lingering, more lingering after. That's the part to me that is so missing, because people would wait, you know, they'd walk someone to their meeting, their next meeting, or they would say, hey, did you get my email? And they'll be late for the next meeting because they want to make sure that the email that they got, they're looking at. And so then people will linger after. And that's the part, to me, that's the part that is breaking down culture, because that in and of itself, those conversations are what makes are such an artifact of culture.
Yeah.
So what I'm seeing people do is they're slacking people right after, they're just picking up the phone right after a group meeting and saying, hey, I want to follow up on something that happened in that meeting or whatever. But it's still have to make yourself do it. It's not like a natural thing.
No, it's not. But I'll say this, and I'm not just trying to, you know, put lipstick on a pig here, but can you imagine 10 years ago? Like, the fact that we have this technology so ubiquitously available to us, I can't even imagine, even just 10 years ago, what this would be like. So yes.
It'd be a lot of phone calls.
And it would have been. And how much would we lose because of that? How much it would have been on the phone. And so in the midst of that, yes. Slack, jump over. Hey, let's connect. Let's follow up. Probably Zoom could add a feature where people just click on a button and they're automatically in a room together with us. That doesn't, you know, break. That's be locked. Mm-hmm. Because that's what happened, right? You broke up and these two people went here. And these three people.
Yeah.
It'd be great if they had a little feature like that. Maybe we can help them.
And we should tell them that.
Yeah.
And get credit. No, kidding. Is there anything else about our others' focus you want to mention? Because we're going to probably wrap up at this point.
You know, I would just say at a base level, it's about challenge yourself to reduce the self-interest. I mean, you brought it up earlier, and we want to make that really complicated at times, but I'm going to go back to the curious space. If I just said, I'm going to use the phrase, tell me more about that X number of times per week. And I was taught that phrase by Dr. Mary Shippey, and I will tell you, it's impacted my life, not just professionally, but personally. Mm-hmm. And so yes, we're working on a deep thing, but sometimes working on the deep thing is not that complicated. What if I just put some habits in where said, look, I'm going to actually go the next question to care enough to say, hey, tell me more about that. And if I do that over and over and over again, mm-hmm. gives us a chance to light that fire of maybe it's not all about me.
Tell me more is a wonderful thing to have in our back pockets, right? Or yeah. front pocket,
all
either
the
way.
Time. All, yeah, the-
all the time. It's like never ending. You can do it 10 times a day. It's not doing enough.
I agree.
So thank you so much, Tim. This has been delightful. It's been fun. I just want to go back here to your information, so I'm getting it right. So it's at Tim Spiker. That's your Twitter account. Let's all go follow Tim. And it's theaperio.com is your website.
You know, a little easier place, because the book is The Only Leaders Worth Following. We also have theonlyleaders.com. That's probably going to be easier.
Okay.
So
theonlyleaders.com. I love it.
And all right. If we have a little something for your audience, if it's okay. If you go to theonlyleaders.com, there's a little coupon section in there, and you get to pick the word, Sue. What's the magic word that they put in the coupon?
Curious.
All right. So the word is curious. If you go there, of course, that would put you on our contact list. But if you go and put curious there and just write us a note, we're happy to follow up on an hour's time with anybody. We just love connecting with people. And so if anybody wants an hour to talk through some of this for you personally or for your organization, just head over there, put curious in there, and we'll be happy to schedule a time to visit.
Nice. That's awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. So everyone, next Wise Talk is February 25th at 11 a.m. Pacific with Bob Zukas. And he is the co-author of The Great Reboot, Succeeding in a World of Catastrophic Risk and Opportunity. I'm assuming he wrote that within the last 10 months, but I don't know, maybe he didn't.
Yeah.
We'll see. So again, Tim, thank you so much. So appreciate you, and carry on. It sounds like you're doing some great work. Appreciate it.
Thank you for having me, sir. Thank you.